you ever heard of the knowledge doubling curve? You probably have, may not have known it by that name, but it's an idea that was first proposed by Buckminster Fuller in 1982 in a book he wrote called Critical Path. What he was attempting to do was describe how often human knowledge accumulates. And he, according to him, I don't really know, I've never read the book, so I don't really know how he came to his conclusions, but nonetheless, he was trying to figure out how often knowledge doubles and accumulates. He figured that somewhere around the year AD 1, the sum total of everything that human beings knew would double about every 1,500 years. And then somewhere around AD 1439, which is when the Gutenberg invented the printing press, that sped up the process by which we accumulate knowledge, and so he figured it was about 250 years at that point. At the beginning of the 20th century, around AD 1900, he figured that at that point knowledge was accumulated, doubling about every 100 years. By 1950, post, you know, the World War II era, he figured that knowledge was doubling at a pace of about every 25 years. And the estimate today is that every 12 years, human knowledge doubles. Everything that we know doubles about every 12 years. That is a staggering number. I've even seen some estimates that say in the future we'll be talking about a matter of days in terms of how often our knowledge accumulates. And the thing is, I read those numbers, I look at that, and if we're learning that much, what's wrong with us? If we know so much, if our knowledge is increasing so quickly, why do we behave so badly? T.S. Eliot said, "Where is the wisdom we have lost in knowledge, and where is the knowledge we have lost in information?" And that statement is probably about 75 years old, or maybe a little bit more than that. He was right. For all of our learning, for all of our information, for all of our knowledge, we behave badly. We don't behave with wisdom. And I think some people have mistaken the concept of data and information for wisdom. Just because you know a lot doesn't mean you're particularly wise in the way that you behave. Muhammad Ali once said, "The man who views the world at 50 the same he did as he did at 20 has wasted 30 years of his life." And his point is, as we grow older, and as we learn more about life and about the world around us, ideally, it should change the way we look at things. It should change the way we behave in so many ways. Well, what I want us to do is tackle this business of wisdom. And what I want to do tonight is start a series based on the book of Proverbs, at least part of the book of Proverbs. I want us to talk about the idea of uncommon sense, because that's exactly what Proverbs is dealing with. Not common sense, because if you behave according to common sense, you can still behave pretty badly. The book of Proverbs is really about wisdom for daily living, godly wisdom for daily living. And we're not going to look at the entire book. That would be almost impossible. The breadth of the book, the depth of the book of Proverbs is staggering, just how much stuff there is. But what I want us to look at is the first nine chapters, because the first nine chapters differ fundamentally from the rest of the book. When we think of Proverbs, we think of those one-liners. We think of those individual verses that will say some pithy, witty, wise thing. And that's mainly chapters 10 through 31. There's a little bit of that in the first nine chapters, but chapters 1 through 9 is primarily lengthier wisdom poems. It's a celebration of wisdom. It's an exaltation of godly wisdom. The first nine chapters say this is what wisdom is about, and this is why we ought to pursue it. And there are some really powerful principles in those first nine chapters that I think say a lot to us about the importance of wisdom and how it shapes our lives. So for the next few Sunday nights, what I'd like to do is go through these first nine chapters in the book of Proverbs and look at some of the things that it has to say about wisdom. Tonight I want us to look at just the opening verses of the book of Proverbs. There's a little bit of a prologue in Proverbs chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. And as we look at this, I want you to think about a jigsaw puzzle. Now, I don't know about anybody else, but I like jigsaw puzzles. In fact, I like them so much that I have trouble walking past one without doing something to it. It's one of those things that if there's a jigsaw puzzle laying on your table, I will stop and put a piece in. No, I'll stop and solve it is what I'll do. I have this obsession with it. But what really aggravates me about jigsaw puzzles is when pieces are missing. I can't sleep at night if there are pieces missing. if I get to the end and there's a hole or two left, that bothers me. That bothers me profoundly. And but I think it's interesting because life in many ways is like a jigsaw puzzle. We have all of these pieces and we're expected to put them together in a sensible way. And in the same way that a jigsaw puzzle with pieces missing can be a disturbing thing, what if we don't have all the pieces that we would like to have in terms of our lives? What if we have this and this and this and this, but there's still a gaping hole in the middle of life itself? That's a problem. Or another thing that I really don't like is when different pieces from different puzzles are mixed in together. That drives me bananas. I hate that. That bothers me. And a lot of people are that way. A lot of people, their morality is based on a little snippet of this, a little snippet of that, a little bit of Christianity, little bit of Hinduism, a little bit of Oprah, a little bit of the horoscope from the Monday morning paper. That is the morality, that is the ethical thinking of a lot of people. It's just snippets, it's bits and pieces from a wide variety of sources. Another thing that bugs me about jigsaw puzzles is when the cover is missing and you don't have the picture. You got to have the picture. You got to have something that tells you what is this supposed to look like at the end. And we need the same thing in terms of our lives. We need a picture of what life is supposed to look like when all the pieces are, in fact, put together. And without that, we can't successfully put together the jigsaw puzzle. And I want to suggest that the book of Proverbs, and particularly the opening verses of the book of Proverbs, the introduction to it, really, in a sense, are talking about finding these missing pieces. If you would turn to Proverbs chapter 1, I want to read the opening seven verses of the text. It says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance, to understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction." Now, that little paragraph in many ways is unique. In fact, most books of the Bible don't really have a formal introduction. Proverbs does. Proverbs actually says this is what the book is about. It tells us the material of the book. It says it's the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. There are other authors mentioned in the book, but primarily it's a collection of Solomonic Proverbs. So the material of the book is mentioned. The purpose of the book is given. The response that is expected of the reader is also given. And the theme of the book is given. So that's the preface in these first seven verses. And again, that's a little bit unique in biblical literature. Most books don't have that precise of an introduction to their content. And the book of Proverbs does have that. So this tells us something about the nature of this book. To use the analogy of a jigsaw, I think in many ways the book of Proverbs is like a jigsaw puzzle. There's a lot of pieces there. There are about 915 verses in the book of Proverbs. And most of them, once you get to chapter 10, as I said, the first nine chapters are more wisdom poems. They're lengthier compositions. But once you get to chapter 10 and go through the end of the book, most of what's there are, if you will, wisdom one-liners. They're just individual statements. Pretty much, in most cases, no context is given. If you know me, you know I talk a lot about context in Bible passages. When you're looking at a Bible passage, you try to understand as best you can the context. In many of the Proverbs, there is no context. You just have this statement. Sometimes it has absolutely no connection to the verse in front of it or the verse that follows it. Sometimes you just have this statement and you're supposed to take it and meditate on it and figure out what wise behavior is. And so it's like these random pieces of a jigsaw puzzle, and we're supposed to put them together in a way that helps us become wise. As I said, the material, according to this, is a proverb or a collection of proverbs. Proverbs is mashal, is the Hebrew word, and it's equated, if you look down in verse 6, he says, to understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. Proverbs are simply words of wisdom. Someone has said that they are statements that are short on words and long on experience, and that's a pretty good way to describe them. They are short, witty sayings. There is always a point to them, although sometimes the point is a little bit obscure. But they are memorable sayings that express a general truth. Many of the Proverbs are not universally true. In other words, there can be exceptions to some of the statements in the Proverbs. We'll look at some examples of that a little bit later. But generally, they are most of the time, Proverbs are stating general principles of moral truth. And they reflect how the world works. They are intended to be applied to a wide range of circumstances. I think that's why many of them lack specific contexts. Once you bind a context to a particular teaching, sometimes that limits the scope of the teaching. If you don't have a context, that actually broadens the applicability of a particular teaching. Many of the Proverbs, sometimes we read them and we think about them, we think, well, that doesn't make sense, or didn't he say something different in another passage? Look, for example, in Proverbs chapter 26. Proverbs 26 in verses 4 and 5. Verse 4, answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. In other words, sometimes a fool pipes up, he says something, and the best thing you can do is say absolutely nothing. I think we get that. I think sometimes you understand that arguing with a foolish person is a waste of time. And that's all well and good, and we all get that. But look at verse 5. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. So one verse says, don't answer a fool according to his folly. And the next verse says, answer a fool according to his folly. So which one is it? And the answer is both. The answer is, you do both of them. And wisdom knows the difference. Wisdom understands that in some circumstances, you apply one proverb to one situation or one kind of person. And wisdom says, in a different set of circumstances, you might apply the other one. And that's the nature of the Proverbs. It's this wide-ranging material that has all kinds of applicability. We have a lot of Proverbs. We use them in everyday life. You've probably heard somebody say, a penny saved is a penny earned. The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. A stitch in time saves nine. Spare the rod, spoil the child. And one of my favorites of all time, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. Anybody remember that one? that was a proverb, and it actually worked, for one person anyway. But those are examples of just these short, witty, wise sayings, and that's what the book of Proverbs is a collection of. Well, I want to look now at the purpose. Look at verses 2, 3, and 4. There are four verbs that are used in those verses, and these verbs describe what Solomon is trying, or the reader is supposed to get out of this, and what the book of Proverbs is trying to accomplish. He says, to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. So there are four actions that are described here. To know something, and that is to have an intimate acquaintance, to acknowledge something, to recognize something, and then to understand. Understand is a little bit deeper. It's the idea of heeding and considering something with a goal to instruction and learning. He also says the purpose is to receive, so that's talking about it from the student's point of view. If you're reading the Proverbs, you are to receive this. You are to receive this instruction in wise dealing. And then the last action described in verse 4 is to give. The purpose of all of this is to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. So those four things is what the book of Proverbs is aiming to do. And if you look at all that, that's cognitive. If you look at all of that, that is learning to think about life in particular ways, learning to take a particular perspective from God's Word, taking that perspective, and learning to look at things in the way that the Bible looks at them. That it's a reorientation of how we look at things. The emphasis here is on thoughtfulness. In life, as exhausting as it is, we're never allowed to turn our brains off. A lot of people do that. A lot of people do that on a regular basis. They seem to flip the switch and quit thinking about their actions, their impact on others, the consequences of their actions. The wise person is always thinking. The wise person is always thinking about their behavior and putting it in a wider context. Now, the objective of this, look a little bit more closely at verse 3. So we are to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight. But look particularly at verse 3. To receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity. So what he wants us to learn is about wise dealing, he says, righteousness, justice, and equity. These words have to do with the day-to-day affairs of life. Wise dealings, instruction, or the idea of wisdom. The idea here is of learning to deal with people in a prudent way. Have you ever done something in your life, you're dealing with somebody else, maybe you're dealing with a customer at work, maybe you're dealing with your boss or a coworker, maybe you're dealing with your neighbor in some way, and you do something, and you say something, and about a millisecond later you say, I should have done that differently. That's wise dealings. It's learning from your mistakes. It's learning how to assess a particular situation, a particular relationship, a particular set of circumstances, and saying, what is the best way to respond in this particular set of circumstances? But the Proverbs are also concerned with morality. I think that's something we miss. A lot of people look at the book of Proverbs and say, well, that's just common sense. Well, yes it is, no it isn't. Proverbs were common literature in the ancient Near East. A lot of people, not just the Israelites, but a lot of ancient Near Eastern cultures had wise men, and they sat around making up proverbs, and they sat around making observations about life. Some people look at this and say, well, this is just kind of common sense. Anybody should know this. Well, if anybody should know it, we often exhibit a lack of knowledge about this stuff. This is stuff that has moral bearing on our lives. You look at how the book of Proverbs treats the lazy person. And sometimes it's explaining their laziness in terms of the work ethic. It's saying that they're not very good at their jobs. Sometimes it's saying that they're not, that they put other people in danger. Sometimes it's saying that the lazy person is irritating. But sometimes it puts these at a moral level. It describes these people not just as fools, but as wicked. So there is a strong moral element in the book of Proverbs because it reflects the morality of God. Why is it that if you work hard in the summer, you'll have good crops in the winter? Because that's how God designed the world. That's not accidental. That is a truthful thing, and the Proverbs reflect that. The Proverbs talk about working hard and getting the rewards of your work. There's a reason for that. It's not just common sense. It is divine sense. It is how God has ordered His world. That's why it works that way. Yeah, there are plenty of exceptions to that. I'll grant you that. But the book of Proverbs says God has fixed the world in a certain way. Just as surely as I throw something in the air and the law of gravity brings it back down, the law of morality says if I act in an ungodly way, there are ungodly consequences. If I act in a morally upright way, there are morally upright consequences to that as well. Proverbs deals a lot with actions and their consequences. So there is a moral nature to all of this. It deals with the idea of justice and equity, and these have to do with fair treatment of other people. It also has to do with helping people who can't help themselves. So what Proverbs is dealing with, the objective that it's seeking, is not just knowledge and understanding and wisdom and so forth for its own sake. It is knowledge and wisdom and so forth to help us have godly behavior, to help us develop this kind of character. Character is the goal of the book of Proverbs. To help you make better decisions, to help you think about things in a better way so that you respond to others in the right kind of way. And when you do that, you will be exhibiting godly, wise character. So that is the objective of learning these things here in the book of Proverbs. Now, it also talks about who needs it in verses 4 and 5. Verse 4, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth, let the wise hear and increase learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. Three classes of people. The simple. This is the naive person. This is the person who might be a little bit on the gullible side. This is the person who does not always think through his actions clearly as he ought to. What Solomon is telling us is, you study these Proverbs, you study these things that I'm telling you, it will help you to make better decisions. It's also addressed at the youth. You know what the biggest problem is with being young? Is that you're young and you're not old. You haven't had time to learn things. You haven't had time to make mistakes. You haven't had time to learn from your mistakes. It says to the young person, it says, if you will study these proverbs, I can put you ahead of the game. I can help you, Solomon says, act like a more mature person. A lot of times, the only way we learn things is by our mistakes. That is true. But sometimes we can learn from the mistakes of others. And Solomon says, I got a whole lot of mistakes here. There's a whole lot of things that I talk about in this book. I can help you learn this so that you can make better decisions. And the last category of who needs this is in verse 5, and I think this is the most interesting person on the list, the wise. Wait a minute here. I thought we're supposed to read the Proverbs to become wise, and yet he's saying the wise person can benefit from this as well. Verse 5, let the wise hear what? Hear these Proverbs, and increase in learning. If you're wise, you can still learn something from this collection of wise sayings. If you're already wise, you can grow even more. And the implication is that part of wisdom is the capacity to grow. Part of wisdom is the humility to say, I need to grow. Part of wisdom is knowing your own limitations. A lot of people don't understand that. A lot of people look at themselves and they have an inflated view of their abilities, an inflated view of their wisdom, an inflated view of this and that. And Solomon says, if you will look carefully at this book, it will help you, whether you're simple, whether you're young, or even if you're already wise, it will help you become an even better person than whatever you may be right now. And the expected response, here's another thing that's unique about this introduction. It says, here's what I want you to get out of this. And so in verse 5 of our text, let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. So what response does he want us to do? First of all, just to hear. Just to hear. Now, parents, how often do you ask your kids, are you listening? Did you hear anything I said? Wives, you ever say that to your husband? Are you listening? Did you hear anything I said? How many times have you been in conversations and you're pretty sure that glassy-eyed look means the person is not listening to you? It's a pretty good indicator. The first application that we're supposed to make is listen. Listen to what the wise man has to say. Actually read this. Actually take it in. Actually pay attention to what this book has to say. And then another thing he says is we're supposed to increase in certain areas. We hear, and by listening, we increase in our learning. And then on top of that, he says, we increase our learning, we acquire understanding, and so forth. And then he says to increase in learning, the one who understands, obtain guidance. I have acquire, I think the word it should be obtain. And then he says to understand a proverb and a saying, to understand these things. Now that last statement in verse 6, I think is worth a little bit closer look. He says, I want you to study the Proverbs, I want you to think about them. I don't care what level you're at, don't care how wise you are, how unwise you are, study this and you'll get better at this. How do you do it though? Well, verse 6, what he says in verse 6, to understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. He's describing the kind of literature in the book of Proverbs. At one level, Proverbs is a literary exercise. I want you to read these proverbs and riddles, these mysterious sayings, these odd little sayings that you have trouble making sense. By learning about the literature, you learn something about life. Now, that's an odd way of looking at it. We tend to have kind of a deaf ear when it comes to literature in the Bible. We just want the direct command. Tell me what I need to do. And sometimes it's not that easy. Sometimes the Bible expects us to take some principles and be creative in how we apply it. It expects us to look carefully and honestly at our circumstances, at ourselves, at our attitudes, and make the responsible application. What Solomon says is, look closely at these sayings themselves. There is wisdom in them. And if you look closely at these sayings, then you're going to learn how to respond in the proper and wise way. What I want to do at this point is just take you through the book of Proverbs. I just want to read a bunch of Proverbs to show you a little bit of how broad the book is, and to show you how some of these, what he calls here, the Proverbs, the sayings, the words of the wise, the riddles, there are some remarkable statements in here. There are some drop-dead funny statements in here. There are some harsh statements in here. There are some head-scratching statements in here. But there's a lot of wisdom in here, too. Here's my list. Proverbs 10. These are just some of my favorites. Proverbs 10, verse 26. Proverbs 10, verse 26. Like vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to those who sin him. I love the word sluggard. It's just such it's a funny word. It describes someone who's just about worthless. Someone who's just lazy to the point that you just want to throttle them. And how does he describe the lazy person here? They're an irritant. I've never had vinegar on my teeth, I don't think so. I've had smoke in my eyes. Isn't that irritating? You ever been around a lazy person, someone who just will not do anything at all? Doesn't that just drive you nuts? That's the lazy person. So Proverbs 10, verse 26. Proverbs 11, verse 22. Now, some people get upset at this. Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman without discretion. That is not anti-woman. That is anti-foolish women is what that's talking about. Women who don't use their beauty in a wise way. Maybe they flaunt it. Maybe they're immodest about it. They don't really use their beauty and their charm in an effective way. And he says, for all of that, it's like putting gold jewelry on a pig. It just doesn't make any sense. It's worthless. Proverbs chapter 13. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 22. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous. Book of Proverbs talks a lot about money and talks about how we handle money. And here it commends the person who saves money, not just to hoard it up, but rather to save it up to pass it on to future generations. Proverbs chapter 14. Proverbs chapter 14, down in verse 25. A truthful witness saves lives, but one who breathes out lies is deceitful. Have you ever been hurt by somebody else's lies? They just flat out lie to you. Maybe they lie about you. And danger comes or harm comes because of that. Proverbs 14, verse 34. How often do we think about this in our era? Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people. Proverbs 15, verse 1. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. If you've ever said the wrong word at the wrong time in the wrong way, you know exactly what that proverb means. And sometimes it takes a great deal of self-control to learn how to speak in a responsible way. Proverbs 15, verse 16 and 17, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble with it. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fattened ox and hatred with it. In our culture, we have so much in the way of material possessions, we need to learn that. Sometimes it's better to do without and have peace and harmony and tranquility and enjoy your supper than it is to have a whole lot of stuff and you're miserable all the time. Proverbs 16, verse 3. We need to think about this every morning when we're making out our daily to-do list. Proverbs 16, verse 3. Commit your work to the Lord and your plans will be established. Proverbs 18, verse 22. Proverbs 18, verse 22. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. I say amen to that. I know what that verse is talking about. Proverbs 19, verse 24. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish and will not even bring it back to his mouth. Now, I bet all of us have been so tired at times, it's hard to finish your meal. This ain't talking about a person being tired. It's talking about a person lazy. He is so lazy, he bends his face down to his plate because it's just too hard to lift that morsel up to his mouth. You ever know anybody that lazy? I've known a few people. And it's not a pretty sight. It's comical, but it's pathetic at the same time. Proverbs chapter 20. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 14. I love this one. Bad, bad, says the buyer. But when he goes away, then he boasts. That's called garage sailing. That's called what happens when somebody comes to your yard sale and they pick up that thing. Oh, this is just terrible. You're asking way too much money. And then they go home and they brag to everybody. You don't see the thing I got. Isn't that how we are? Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Proverbs 25, verse 11. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a setting of silver. That was my dad's favorite proverb. To say the right thing in the right way at the right time is a beautiful thing. And that's exactly what that proverb is reminding us of. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 16 and 17. If you have found honey, eat only enough for you, lest you have your fill of it and vomit it. What that's saying is, too much of a good thing isn't too good. But look at how that's applied in the very next verse. The very next verse has exactly the same principle. Let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. You can be too chummy with people. Sometimes you get too close and you start irritating each other, and that's not a good thing. Proverbs chapter 26 in verse 13. Here again, the sluggard. The sluggard says, there is a lion in the road. There's a lion in the streets. Some people will make up any excuse to get out of work. And then the very next verse, he says, as a door turns on its hinges, so does a sluggard on his bed. That sounds like our dog at the foot of our bed every morning. We get up and she sees us and she goes, and kind of rolls over on her side. And some people are like that. I have to work. I have to do something. I told you the Proverbs are funny. Proverbs 27, verse 14 and 15. Whoever blesses his neighbor with a loud voice rising early in the morning will be counted as cursing. You have friends like that? You walk in the office, you're not quite awake, you haven't had your coffee yet, haven't had your Krispy Kreme, and some, good morning, it's great to see you. Not so much. Not that time of day. Now, I've just read roughly 24 verses from Proverbs, but think about the breadth and the scope and just how many different topics we've covered. And that's the book of Proverbs. There's a lot of discussion among scholars about whether there's any structure in the book of Proverbs. Many scholars just say it is pretty much totally random. I mean, there are some obvious groupings. You know, we've read some Proverbs that are obviously put right next to each other for a particular reason. But very often it's hard to detect if there's any real connection between verse 7 and verse 8 of any given chapter. And there's a theory behind it that says Proverbs reflect the random nature of life. Sometimes our life doesn't make a great deal of sense. Have you ever noticed that as you go through your day, things change at a very rapid pace? You're doing this for a moment, and then the next moment you're doing something totally different. Things are going along fine, and then suddenly Junior gets sick and is thrown up everywhere, and then next thing you know, the whole family, ask the Freeharts. You know? They've experienced that. Life can be random. Life just changes like that. You're going along, everything is going well, and you get rear-ended, and guess what? You're late. And guess what? You don't have any transportation. And guess what? It's the end of the month, and you don't have the money for the deductible. Doesn't life happen like that? And so there may be a bit of wisdom behind the book of Proverbs being so random. It just reflects the nature of life itself. I think there is some structure there, but I think there's also an element of just spontaneity to them. We read through them and you change gears about every other verse, and there's a reason for that, because life is like that. And what Solomon is telling us as we go through all of this is read this and learn from it. I can tell you how to navigate all these ups and downs in your day-to-day life. Now, the most important verse I haven't gotten to yet, and I'm going to do this very quickly. This is the book of Proverbs. This is the theme for the book of Proverbs. It's verse 7. Proverbs 1, verse 7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Do you fear the Lord? Are you humble enough to learn from Him? Or are you so foolish, are you so arrogant, are you so full of your own ways that you will not listen to reason, you will not listen to wisdom, you will not listen to instruction? That's what the book of Proverbs is about. Listening to godly wisdom so that we can learn how to be better people. As I said, there are something like 915 verses. I think it's 915 verses in the book of Proverbs, and they're all dealing with wisdom. Now, there is one thing that's missing, and that is Jesus. He's the final word. You know, in our scripture reading tonight, I didn't plan it this way, but in our scripture reading tonight, grace and truth were revealed through Jesus. The ultimate manifestation of God's grace, the ultimate manifestation of truth, and the ultimate manifestation of wisdom came in the person of Jesus. And if we want to be wise, we'll read books like Proverbs and we'll study them and we'll think on them. And then we see that embodied in the life of Jesus. Jesus always acted with wisdom and prudence. He always knew the right thing to say at the right moment. He always knew how to respond in every situation. And so he holds up for us an example of how we put a book like this into practice. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, we always want to conclude our service by offering you a chance to obey Jesus as Lord, to be buried with Him in baptism, to become a follower of His. And so if you're here tonight and you've never obeyed the gospel, we want to give you that opportunity. For those of us who are Christians, are we living wisely? That's kind of a tough question, isn't it? A tough question to answer. It's a hard thing. All of us can look back at specific behaviors and decisions and say, you know, I didn't act very wisely. But let me tell you this, if you see a pattern of foolishness in your life, that needs to be corrected. We're all going to make mistakes. We will all make mistakes, but if you see a consistent pattern of failure and foolishness, that's why Proverbs was written, and we need to get the moral help and the wisdom help that we ought to have. If we can help you in any way tonight in your spiritual life, we'd invite you to come forward while we stand and sing.